put some layers on you.
So moving on to the definition of a business, agenda paper 2. Other people at the table?
Good.
You get it?
Yesterday.
Good morning. The objective of this session is to get your advice on the screening test proposed in the exposure draft definition of a business and accounting for previously held interest issued by the ISB in June 2016. We are asking your advice on the proposed screening test because in our view this is the most commented issue of the exposure draft. The comments received from ASAF members on the screening test are reproduced in Appendix A of Agenda Paper 2. As explained in paragraph 10 to 12 of Agenda Paper 2, the ISB proposed that a set of assets is not a business if the fair value of the gross assets acquired is concentrated in a single asset or group of similar assets. According to the exposure draft, if substantially all of the fair value of the assets acquired is concentrated in a single asset or a group of similar assets, further assessment of whether a substantive process exists is not required. So the ISB proposed a determinative screening test. We received three main comments on this screening test. The first comment is that the proposed screening test may sometimes result in inappropriate conclusions. Some respondents to the exposure draft, including some ASAF members, noted that the screening test might lead to a conclusion that a set of assets is not a business, even if it would be considered a business applying the guidance on substantive processes. These respondents suggested different solutions, for example, by changing the screening test to an indicator or a rebuttable presumption or an optional test. The second main comment is the request to clarify whether deferred tax assets and deferred tax liabilities should be considered in performing the screening test. These respondents suggested excluding the effect of deferred taxes from the screening test. The third main comment is the request to clarify the term similar assets. For example, some respondents suggesting clarifying that assets can be considered similar if the nature, risk, and characteristic of the asset are similar. The FSB discussed these issues in August and decided to confirm that the screening test should be determinative. The FSB also clarified that the effect of deferred taxes should be excluded from the screening test, and that assets that have different risk are not similar assets. The FSB issued its final amendment in January. An extract of these amendments is reproduced in Appendix B of Agenda Paper 2. In page 5 of the paper, we have three questions for you. The first one is, what is your advice on the suggestion to change the test to an indicator or a rebuttable presumption? I would like to focus the discussion on this first question because, in my view, this is the most important question.
Can I just ask you something first, if that's all right? So the proposal to introduce this test came as a result of the post-implementation review where of IFRS 3, which from memory told us that people sometimes found it challenging to work out whether they were in scope or not. So presumably the proposal that we had, which is similar to what the FASB proposed, was introduced to try and make it easier for people to perform this test, right? So if you look at the feedback overall, What was the response from the preparer community? Was it that they liked the idea of a screening test subject to changes in words, or did they not like the idea of a screening test?
I think that overall the majority of the respondents agree with a determinative screening test, even though they ask clarification about similar assets or including the ferret tax asset. Overall, they agree with the main proposal to have a determinative screening test. However, we receive many comments that disagree with this proposal. Some of these comments are included in this table.
And hoping at some point Jim might put his card up, at which point he's left the table.
Sorry.
Jim, I think at some point it would be interesting to know, sort of as an overall picture, whether this is very different or similar to the sort of feedback that you got in terms of where you were, you know, started your re-deliberations.
I think it's very, very similar. I think by and large, preparers who were struggling to figure out whether they're in or out of scope were comfortable with having a determinative screening test. Perhaps some of the concern that led to, or that we heard in the PIR, is maybe a little bit broader. That is, we had things that seemed very clearly to be asset acquisitions that were getting caught up into business combinations. I buy a piece of land with a billboard on it, and I'm receiving leasing revenue from the billboard. Or I buy a portfolio of homes in default, and two of them happen to be leased in a portfolio of 100, but I'm deriving some source of revenue, and so I must have some process for deriving that source of revenue. So have I acquired a business or a set of homes? And so I think with that as a background, we thought we were being more responsive by having the screen be determinative rather than saying, well, you still have a portfolio of homes. You can look, they're similar. You've gone through the first screen, but it's not determinative, so you have to run the model anyway, and you're left with, well, I have some minor source of income. Do I have a substantive profit?
Right,
let's
go in reverse this way. Melinda?
Sure. So just a few comments. I would note that this concept of whether or not it's a business combination or the purchase of an asset was a big issue in the transition to IFRS. And so as we tracked the difficulties that our entities had, this one in particular was difficult for them. So the improvements you're suggesting to make, I think, will help them. That's the general feedback that we've had. I noted in the paper that you quoted the letter from the Canadian Bankers Association that takes a different view, and there's reasons why they take a different view, but they also have, including myself, some pretty good resources to figure it out. So the vast majority of our entities would find the screening test helpful. And we also think, we'll not shock you to say, that we think you need to get to the same place in outcomes that the FASB's gotten, because it's very important from, you know, this standard business combinations that there is common global reporting from a comparability perspective. That, first and foremost, is our message. Secondly, we're in an interesting situation now because the FASB's got theirs done and they've got an effective date, and you're still working on yours. Now, in Canada, that won't cause any issues because our entities, the vast majority, are IFRS entities, and if they're dual listed, they have the choice of filing US GAAP or IFRS. But I think what will happen is that if the investment community decides they want to figure out what's the impact of this amendment with the U.S. going earlier than IFRS following, there's going to be some specialized reporting or disclosure to the investment community around what would this be if you were under U.S. GAAP and they're giving IFRS statements or vice versa. So it's something that I think you just need to be mindful of as you progress the project, because ideally, this notion of them not being tracking right now from an effective date perspective may be problematic for some period of time.
Thank you. Our understanding is that it would be rare that the screening test would result in inappropriate results. And similar to what Linda said, we believe it is very important to have the same answer as the FASB did. And therefore, we think for this issue, the screening test should be determined.
Thank you. Kim?
Thanks, Sue. Actually, if you don't mind, just a question to Jim initially. So is it the intention from a US GAAP perspective that some of these inappropriate outcomes that have been cited, that they wouldn't be treated as business combinations? I mean, is that explicit?
So I don't think it was a view that they were necessarily inappropriate outcomes. That if you had either a group of assets or a single asset, and you couldn't identify anything else substantively acquired, that it wasn't an inappropriate outcome to account for that as an asset acquisition. The view in the U.S. more broadly is perhaps we ought to really solve the real problem, which is why do we get different accounting when I'm buying asset groups versus businesses, as opposed to saying, well, the accounting is inappropriate if I reach this conclusion or that conclusion.
Yep.
And that's actually our longer term projects. I think in the intermediate term, we weren't so convinced that the accounting was inappropriate or not. We're drawing an artificial distinction between a continuum of activities. And so we thought having a clearer articulation of that line, as long as we're going to have differences, was more important than again suggesting that the outcome is inappropriate.
It was more, I think, and some of the examples that others have cited around saying, well, it was clear that these are business combinations, yet because of the threshold, you don't get to business combination accounting.
So I guess it wasn't so clear to us that those were business or at least to some of us that those were business combinations.
Okay.
If you can't find anything else acquired other than a single asset, and not necessarily clear that that's, I mean, that might be the stakeholders' view that it is clear that perhaps wasn't everybody's view.
Yeah. Because I must say that I certainly think that if the objective was to simplify the application, having something that is determinative certainly achieves that objective. That's why I just wanted to know in some of those examples, because if the ISB goes a different view and says, well, it's only a rebuttable presumption, then I think that presumption is going to be rebutted.
Yeah.
It is going to be rebutted, and these clearly, evident examples are going to be treated as business combinations. Because then the other thing that I then say, well, what is the downside of this outcome? Because if, substantially all or significant amount of the consideration is concentrated in a single asset, well, then even if you were to apply business combination accounting, how material is the goodwill and all that? And yes, notwithstanding all the other differences, but, at the end of the day. So maybe from an overall materiality perspective, so maybe theoretically one could argue that in some cases this should be treated as a business combination, but is the ultimate accounting really going to be that materially different? So, I think if it is to simplify the process.
From my point of view, I think that was the sort of logic that we were coming.
It is.
Andrew?
In this issue, the status of the screening test was the most difficult issue in developing our comment letter on the preceding ED, and there were a range of views. And that said, where we landed was that it can only be justified to retain this as a mandatory determinative screen if the extent of situations in which it would give a different answer to the rest of the guidance without the screening test would be, I'll say, vanishingly small. Now, we don't seem to have, we don't think we're there. Our constituents are still telling us, identifying various circumstances in which they think the screening test could or would give you a different outcome. And that doesn't seem like a good thing to us. I'd also question, just how much simpler is this screening test going to be applying the general guidance in the type of situation we have in mind? To identify the test, you've got to determine the fair value of the gross assets acquired. You've got to determine which assets would qualify for recognition under business combination accounting. You've got to figure out which of those subsets of assets should be grouped into similar groups of assets. Then you've got to fair value those to get the other part of your equation. Then you've got to compare the fair value of the individual assets acquired grouped into similar assets to the gross fair value and figure out if that difference is substantial or not. So we've got a quantitative test with two judgments, similar assets and substantially similar or substantially the same, replacing what would otherwise be effectively, when you've acquired some stuff, a qualitative assessment, particularly focused on whether the processes in that acquired set are substantive or not. So I would just question whether enough work has been done in determining which is actually going to be simpler in practice. So having looked at the comments and the arguments, I think we're probably more firmly in the situation that we don't think it's appropriate to retain this as a mandatory determinative test. Then the two alternatives seem to be rebuttable presumption or some form of indicator. I have to say this is more of a personal view, that rebuttable presumption seems to raise more questions than answers to me. When, how hard do you try to rebut it? What type of evidence do you need in order to rebut this presumption? I think it's a danger it becomes something of a de facto accounting policy choice. So maybe I'd encourage you to look at recharacterizing as an indicator. And regarding the FASB's decision, that's very interesting. I don't think the ISB should feel overly bound to come out in the same place for both practical and political reasons. The practical one being that certainly the overwhelming anecdotal evidence, if that's not some kind of oxymoron, seems to be that we're facing different problems here. Jim alluded to the perceived over-recognition, overzealous nature of identifying business combinations in the US environment. I mean, in the round, I don't think that's a situation that the IFRS community faces. It's more about the consistency and clarity of the existing IFRS 3 guidance.
But is that what we heard in the post-implementation review?
Well, it's similar to what we heard in the post-implementation review, but during the outreach on this exposure draft, we did hear about perhaps a different story when it came to foreign private issuers who were reporting under IFRS but filing into the US, where perhaps the US practices were more prevalent. And so I don't think it is something that is not encountered under the IFRS reporting community.
Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of the sort of examples that Jim just mentioned being routinely identified as business combinations in the IFRS world. Politically, I mean, it's great that the two boards have worked together on this, but the FASB is moving ahead in its own time, and so be it. So the convergence part of the process is stopped now. Now the two boards are left to make their own decisions based on the needs of their own constituents. So you need to look after the needs of your own constituency.
From China perspective, we agree that we need some screen test to simplify, to make a judgment of what the business definition of business is really mean, and it's easier for us to application the business or combination accounting. With regarding whether the test should be determinative or rebuttable presumption or indicator, we prefer that it should be rebuttable presumption or indicator. Of course, as Andrew said, if we introduce the rebuttable presumption, maybe there are another issue come out. Some company do rebutted, some company not rebutted. So we need some kind of criteria to explain there. And the issue is that in recent years, Chinese companies actually in China itself all come out to acquire many business overseas. So some of business actually focus on real estate, and this kind of business actually the value mainly focus on the investment properties. And some they acquire some mines in Australia there. So the value mainly focus on mines. So this is the extraction, you know, business industry. Some companies they acquire maybe some investment management service, a management business. So this kind, the value mainly focus on investment assets. So the people always, the entity always regard this should be business, not assets. We buy business, we combine business. But if we use screening test, they will be accounted for assets acquisition. People don't, they think that it's not a reality. And at the end of the day, there are some accounting Consequently, if those business combination will not qualify for the business combination accounting, if on one end, if a company acquire a business, the business is mainly focused on non-financial assets. So the consideration paid will be allocated to those non-financial assets. And they will be cost-based. So at the end of the day, maybe those assets will be overpriced in accounting book, because all of the consideration will be allocated to the those non-financial assets based on the relative fair value portions. So it will be a problem, and the entities basically will buy business, not buy those assets separately. So this is why we support the indicator or presumptive approach. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Patrick.
I think Andrew summarized well the hesitation, rather the fact that we do not support the idea that such a screening test be determinative, because we feel it's a bit too dangerous and too white and black, and therefore in a number of circumstances wouldn't be appropriate. If we go a little further in a letter, I don't understand why it was, probably missed it somewhere. We sent it to EFRAG and copied to you, so maybe it was not taken as a letter per se. I don't know, but no problem. Just mentioning that.
I'm not jealous.
Sorry.
No problem.
Sorry, it shouldn't.
Because slight difference with Andrew, we feel maybe the route of rebuttable presumption is adequate, because it has to be to a certain extent. You need to put maybe the emphasis on the fact that you shouldn't find yourself with a business combination too easily to a certain extent. On the other hand, the other point which we outlined in our letter is that we took the example, which I think is very important, when you transfer together with the assets a significant workforce or significant underlying contracts, this is creating a circumstance where you should be able to rebute the presumption and go to step two rather quickly, because it means that in addition to the assets per se, you have some elements that are not accounted for that represent a significant quote-unquote business or a significant activity, and therefore that is putting the balance on the side of the business combination.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Just thought I'd address why we moved forward, because it wasn't a desire to not have a converged standard. We did first see that the application seemed to be different around the world. Andrew, to your point, perhaps some of the more unusual outcomes that were occurring in the U.S., at least we had heard anecdotally, weren't happening to the same degree under IFRS. Michael, I take your point about foreign private issuers, because the same regulatory forces that caused the application with respect to U.S. issuers probably brought to bear that impact on foreign private issuers as well. But more importantly, our definition of a business is also tied to the adoption of our revenue standard. Our revenue standard applies to contracts with customers, but the same theory applies to the sale of what we call in-substance non-financial assets. And so an entity that sells anything other than a business is viewed as selling an in-substance non-financial asset, whether it's in an entity or not. And so therefore, having a clear definition of what a business is and what a business isn't is important in those that are adopting our revenue recognition standard. Of course, early adopters will be adopting starting this quarter in the U.S., and so we needed to have our standard finalized prior to that adoption. So it wasn't a desire not to work with the ISB. We've been working closely throughout this, including joint deliberations, and actually before we finalized our standard, took on board the input that you had received through your comment process, obviously acknowledging that, of course, we made conclusions before you did, but just thought it might be a helpful context.
Thank you.
Folks, question A, DLC members expressed the mixed views. Some members like Hong Kong, Korea, and Malaysia said that the screening test should not be determinative, but should be a rebuttable presumption or an indicator. Some members like Malaysia and Hong Kong suggested that the ISB consider including a provision that requires qualitative factors to be considered if the proposed screening test results in an outcome that does not reflect the economics of the transactions. Another member said that the screening test should be determinative, while it may be acceptable to include a rebuttable presumption considering the concerns raised by the constituents. For question B, the AOSG jurisdiction said that the ISB should provide more guidance or illustrative examples to clarify what factors should be considered in evaluating whether assets are deemed similar. There could be diversification in interpreting the term similar. The ISB could add illustrative examples that include a clear rationale to illustrate what are the deciding factors for similar assets. And some members suggested that the ISB consider articulating in a manner, principle-based manner, articulating in a more principle-based manner and the wording in the FSB's recent literature. I think to complement the term similar assets, the ISB would need to consider the notion of closely related with each other in terms of process and creation of outputs. For question C, the members agreed with the suggestion that deferred tax assets and the deferred tax liabilities be excluded from the assessment of the concentration of fair value because they should not affect the outcome of the screening test. Lastly, some members are concerned that there may be internal inconsistencies between proposed paragraphs B11B and B11C in the exposure draft. When applying paragraph B11B, one is required to consider the recognition and measurement of the assets in a business combination transaction and could conclude that tangible assets and intangible assets that are inextricably linked would be a single identifiable asset for the asset concentration test. However, B11CA refers to separately identifiable tangible and intangible assets in the general sense and hence implies that these assets should not be combined.
Alexandra.
A lot of discussion here. The question being around which kind of error you want to commit, and maybe under IFRS, yes. Maybe under IFRS 3, we are treating some asset acquisitions as business combination. But if the screen test was determinative, we would treat a lot of asset acquisitions as business combinations as asset acquisitions. The reason is there are a lot of reasons why the fair value of the consideration given may be equal to an asset, to the fair value of an asset or a group of similar assets. For example, the company can be a young company, just starting, did not generate goodwill enough. So you're paying the, if it was a listed company, probably the price to book will be equal to close to one. Imagine a company that has an asset or a group of similar assets, a price to book equals one. So if I buy that company, probably I'll pay most of the fair value that I'm paying is related to a group of assets. Does that mean that I'm not buying a company, I'm buying an asset?
No, it's what most people suggest here is to have a qualitative element of business functioning, of business dynamic, because it's quite clear when you're buying a property with nothing there, when you're buying a drive-through, working, people parking their cars, people doing things. So it's there's an element that differentiates an asset from a business. And it's clear a lot of things can affect that difference. If you think about simple, let's say one example that arises here was companies that are online retailer that basically does not have the inventory, the only asset, the only relevant asset that this company has is the software that this company is operating. So if I buy that company, and this company is not generating too much with you at the moment because it's still the beginning. If I buy that company, say, well, I'm paying 10, this asset is worth something like 9.5, so you're not buying a company. Well, I'm buying a company, it's working, it's functioning. But I'm buying and selling online. So it's hard to believe that this is not a company just because what I paid for this company is similar to the value of the most significant asset. So people are strongly against using the screening test as a determinative, maybe as an element. People think that we're going to make type 2 error now. Treat a lot of business combinations as if they were asset acquisitions.
Bishop?
Well, you have listened to Andrew and to Patrick, you might have the impression that Europe is united. This is not the case in a small issue.
There's no union.
We, in Italy, we have no problem with spinning tests being done. We think that it's...
Leonardo, you did a good job.
Common sense. It will help resolve situations. Indicator or rebuttable presumption means more judgment again. I'm not in agreement with what Andrew said. I mean, there is already a judgmental in what is a similar asset, what is not a similar asset. But even if you use it as an indicator, you still have to make up your mind nevertheless. So we don't have a problem with the alternative. Of course, we can live also with the rebuttable presumption. As I would say, I wanted to say that we are in line with the US. And also, I mean, reading at the description they have of similar asset, this is fairly clear, fairly good indication of what a similar asset is.
Tech?
Thank you. Just a quick comment. I think this topic is a very good topic to consider a rule basis versus principle basis, and also convergence in the standard versus convergence in practice. And actually, if you go down the route of the rule base, the rule must be very precise and clear in order to avoid ambiguity. And also, if there is a rule, it must be decisive, so there should be strong enforcement. And then if you go down the route of the principle basis, then principle must be a little bit clearer. Then the question is about the convergence. So the standard in the convergence in the standard may achieve convergence in practice, but not always the case, because different jurisdictions have different environments. So maybe the purpose of the convergence of this project is to achieve convergence in practice rather than convergence in the standards. So therefore, in this respect, I just want to respond to the Andrew's concern. Convergence has stopped. I don't think it has stopped. It's still going on to achieve the convergence in practice. And we have to consider how can we achieve the convergence in practice.
I think maintaining convergence is nice on converged standards.
Yeah.
Chris?
So I think, Alessandro was heading in the right direction. I think the question is, what's the problem that you're trying to fix? It's quite interesting that it seemed to be the focus was on whether acquisitions were inappropriately being recognised as business combinations. Certainly the issue from an Australian perspective was more whether or not things were being treated as asset acquisitions when in fact they were business combinations. And the two particular areas of concern were around acquisitions of property, things like shopping centres, but also, as George mentioned, the mining activities. So whether or not you acquired something that's basically mining rights, do you actually have goodwill? And certainly in practice, people work very hard to try and get them to be asset acquisitions as opposed to business combinations. So having said all that, I think if you can work out what the risk is that you're trying to actually mitigate, you can decide which way to go. Generally speaking, ISB is meant to be principle-based standards. Introducing a screening test that's determinant of is clearly a rule. So my only concern is I'm not so sure that it's actually going to fix all the problems in any case. And if that's where you sort of land, then I'm not sure that having a determinant of screening test is really going to help all that much. But if you decide to do a rule, do a rule. get on with it. But my preference would be is that you don't do a rule, but you do actually provide some more guidance that does help people with those really key decisions.
Andrew.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just briefly, I mean, over the course of this debate and indeed this morning, a few people have talked about convergence of outcome. I think it's a bit of a reality check. We've had converged wording without achieving the same outcomes already. I don't think, obviously, differences of wording aren't generally going to be conducive to converged outcomes, but until there's a single global regulator and a single global audit firm, heaven forfend, and a single global various other things, we're not going to get converged outcomes because the standard is only one of the determinants of the eventual accounting outcome. So let's not call for a sort of completely unrealistic and unachievable goal. I'm not advocating divergence for the sake of it, but converged outcomes is not something in the standard setter's control, or sole control.
We do need to think about whether the words are clearly telling people to make the same assessments, if that's what we
mean. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so
yes.
Do you want to now talk about similar assets?
Yes. So I think we can discuss the second and the third question together. So the second question is whether you agree with the suggestion to provide further guidance on the meaning of similar assets. And the third question is whether you agree with the suggestion to exclude from the screening test the effect of deferred taxes.
As we have actually defined what's not similar as opposed to what is similar, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, comments?
Yes.
Yeah. Andrew.
Yes, we agree. On the tax point, it seems clear to us that the tax attributes of the acquired assets and liabilities should not affect the determination of whether you've acquired a business or not. I just note that I think the words that perhaps we chose to try and achieve that outcome are good, but actually achieving that completely is not going to be straightforward, because one way in which you can apply the screening test is to take the consideration and then add back the fair value of the liabilities. Well, the tax attributes of what you've acquired will affect the consideration, and actually neutralising, making the test tax neutral, if you will, would involve stripping out the deferred tax assets, stripping out the fair value, I think, of the deferred tax liabilities, having determined what those amounts would be, and then somehow neutralising the consideration amount for tax effects as well. So I don't quite know how to achieve that, but I don't think that's going to be 100% simple.
Chris, I certainly had similar issues around tax and how it would actually work in practice. So on the one hand, I go deferred tax assets and liabilities,
are not fair value numbers, so comparing those to any sort of a fair value test means they're distorted. But my understanding, again, I'm not a valuer, is that there's already tax implications in the fair value numbers that you're coming up with, so I don't actually know how you can make it tax neutral. I think taking the deferred tax out of only one piece actually gets the answer that you want, but I think you have to provide some fairly good guidance as to how you're actually going to do that.
Okay. Hope for you to come in, Jim.
Yeah, so we didn't, I think we had just a more fundamental question. I don't think we had as many operational questions if you are relying on the consideration of how to tax neutralize the consideration, although I suspect that those applying this in practice will perhaps have those questions in the future. I was actually going to respond to the why we went down the negative on defining similar. I think we started out with very similar input as well of saying, if you're going to have similar, should you focus on sort of risk characteristics, et cetera? And we went down the path of saying it had to have similar, you know, the assets had to have similar risk. And then you think about, well, if I bought just 100 homes, again, assume none of them are leased, but I bought 100 homes or even bought a portfolio of mortgages. What does similar risks in that context mean? Do they have to have similar credit ratings, or do the homes have to be in an identical geography? A house in the U.S. in New York probably has some different risks than a house in the Midwest. And so if we were going to say they have to be similar, how similar, I think we found it perhaps easier just to focus on the negative of saying not significantly different. Perhaps that raises similar questions. Not dissimilar questions, but at least it gives a little bit more flexibility of, you know, if you're going to literally say similar, then why not say identical?
So when I read your definition, I just want to check if it's the right way to think about it, because I thought it was interesting. So if you've got significantly different risks, then you can't consider those to be similar. Presumably, if you've got identical risks, then those are similar. And then in between, you need to assess
right.
how similar it is. But you have at least hummed a few bars on what sort of things to think about. So it's things like the risks you manage, and you
right.
have a couple of other things as well.
Just
that, also, is that the way
I
that
think
you
that's
sort of
right. And we also confined it to an asset class. So
yep.
like we thought there were some boundaries, and then some of the things you ought to look at in terms of risk.
Just a curiosity. Property, plant, and equipment in a steel plant would be similar assets.
I'm sorry, a
property, plant, and equipment in a steel plant.
Steel
plant.
Yeah, furnace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so
they have the same risk.
Yeah. So we didn't get into how disaggregated that is with the, you know, so
right.
a single steel plant, you have different PP&E. I think we didn't get into how far you have to disaggregate within.
Yeah. That there's going to be a lot of similar assets.
And as you said, the sort of first boundary is what's recognised and measured as a group, and then you're looking within that. And presentation, no? So what you present on the face, for example, that's not part of it, it's recognised and measured?
Yeah, although I think asset classes, when you say asset class, that does get into how you present.
Trying to work out how much is language difference as opposed to concept difference. Anybody else got anything to add on similar assets, deferred tax assets and liabilities? I think one of the things for me that I'll be asking the staff is that if you come back and it's not a determinative test, so if you were to come back, and I don't know what your takeaway is to make it more of a rebuttable presumption or an indicator. I guess at some point we've got to try and work out whether the cost benefit of the change makes
it's
sense.
Worth it.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Because I think the first idea was a screening test in concept, and I take Andy's points on valuation, etc. It sounds like a quick and easy way of making the first cut, and so sounds responsive to the concerns from those who thought it was too complicated. But the more that we make it a rebuttable presumption or an indicator, some of that goes away. So we then need to think about whether the benefits of the clarifications justify a change in words, which always comes with risks, particularly if it's different to what the FASB did. Mary?
I was just going to say, As well as the screening test, the other area, other main area that we provided additional, proposed additional guidance on was to do with when is a process substantive. And so obviously we will be bringing back to the board the comment letter analysis on that as well. But that, at the end of the day, what really distinguishes a business from a group of assets is a substantive process. And so therefore, even if we didn't go down proposing anything on the screening test and maybe even didn't do anything on there, there's still something to look at and to think hard about in terms of the substantive processes. And we may still find...
I was just thinking about the test in the first instance. Mary?
I think I'm somewhere between the point you were raising, Sue, and what Michael was trying to do in terms of saying to ASAF members, maybe not putting you on the spot now, but thinking about this question, I think the overwhelming feedback that we had in the PIR was the difficulty of making that determination of definition of a business. Mm. And the board attempted to respond to that comment, as Michael was just saying, in a few different ways, many of which are aligned with the changes the FASB was making in terms of, the guidance around acquiring a substantive process and the notion of cost savings, coming out. A number of things that were done to address different aspects of the difficulty of this. But one sense was, as Sue was saying, that if we can say, here's a first test that we think is relatively simple to do and it's determinative, it can save you from getting into what will always be a more complex judgmental determination. And I think that's a wind-up for the question to all of the ASAF members, and maybe not one you want to answer on the spot, of if you stand back and look at the other changes that we have made, how does that drive your weighting of the benefits derived from the screening test, thinking in particular about preparers, I think, who will be facing the how will I prove it to my auditor, to my regulator, how much work do I have to do, and how they might benefit a clean answer versus I've got enough benefit from the other clarifications that I might not be as concerned being at risk for second and third guessing. I don't have a view on that. It's just asking you to stand back rather than, I think it's very easy to get wrapped up in each one as an individual change rather than assessing the whole.
Yeah. Just to mention something that Michael said, which is the process involved in a business, is to think about what's running a business, what's the difference between running a business and running a set of assets, exactly the point of processes which are involved in that. You can run some property that you have, a few properties that you have. It's completely different from running those same properties in a business. So the business has processes that go beyond the assets by itself. So I think that should be more explicit, because it's a clear element that differentiates, at least in my view, a business from a set of assets. It's the processes involved.
Jim?
So, Mary, the points you raise, I think, are similar to ones we thought about in terms of whether or not there should be a rebuttable presumption or an indicator. What was giving rise to the issues in the first instance? And I think we were somewhere between don't have it at all or have it be determinative. Again, maybe we have different regulatory pressures or starting points, but I think that the reaction was, well, if this is a rebuttable presumption, it will actually perhaps increase the cost. It certainly won't reduce the cost in any meaningful way in our context, I think, because people would say we are obligated now to try and rebut the presumption. So now I do the screen, and in addition to that, I now have to go do the tests that I was obligated to do in the first instance. And so in that case, why have the screen? And so I think we thought we're sort of between either have a screen or don't, but let's not, otherwise the model ought to stand on its own. And this was, I think, to strip off those easier ones that perhaps people didn't have to spend as much time thinking about.
Andrew?
Pick up on Mary's point. I think you've got to look at the whole package, and we certainly think the package does respond to the concerns raised in the post-implementation review, which although it's a simplification, I think the existing IFRS 3 guidance is just too kind of weighted towards identifying what is a business without telling you much about when something might not be a business. So we think it does redress that imbalance, perhaps. But on the cost-benefit point, I think I alluded to this already. I'll just encourage, moving forward, encourage the team to take a fresh look at how much simpler this, in the end, quantitative test with embedded judgments mandatory that's applied to, you have to apply every time you've acquired anything, if I'm reading the scope correctly.
No, and I think it's a good challenge, because if I think about the examples that Jim started out with the business and the billboard, that one, it would seem you wouldn't have to work too hard to realise that it's going to meet that screening test. But I can see your case in the cases where it's closer. But if we don't already have a problem with the billboard, then maybe our starting position is different. So maybe we need to think about that a little bit as well. So I think it's a fair challenge. Okay. Got what you need?
Yes.
You know what you need to think about. So now we've earned a break.